Welcome to episode 123 of the Atomic Powered Supercast, with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Incredible Hercules, The New Prince of Power, by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another princely episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
David.
Hey.
And this week marks the start of our Sidekicks Moving Up series. So we're starting off with Amadeus Cho, our boy. We read trade paperback Incredible Hercules, The New Prince of Power, which collects The Fall of an Avenger 1 and 2 from 2010 by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente, and Heroic Age, Prince of Power 1 to 4, also from 2010 by the same two dudes. Oh, nice continuous story.
Except if you looked on Amazon, had them in the wrong order. If you read this, you actually want to read Fall of an Avenger first, and then Prince of Power.
And that's pretty important, because it gets really confusing if you read them backwards. Not that anyone's ever done that.
See, plus then you're like, that would be the worst if that's the way they actually printed it. Like, they just show you the side of a building getting blown out and say, Herc died.
Yeah.
Like, wait, no, he just came back. What was this chaos thing? Wait, what? So anyway, yeah. So what'd you guys think of this one?
I like it, but I have, my opinion is extremely biased because the Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente Hercules run is one of my favorite comics ever, so.
Yeah, this shit's like your jam.
Yeah, so probably I'm the wrong person to ask for an actual opinion. So Jen, take it away.
Well, we've read part of the Greg Pak run before, haven't we? Incredible Hercules?
Yeah, right, we did
The Thorcules issues.
Yeah.
And then even before it became Hercules, when it was the old Hulk run, we read that too.
Yeah.
That's right, yep.
So, I really like Amadeus Cho. I feel like this comic didn't highlight him as well as a character, oddly enough, as the other stuff we've seen him in. And this is supposed to focus on him. He's the new Prince of Power. So that made me feel a little iffy on this. But like as a character, I find him really enjoyable. He's kind of smart and snarky. And now I have a question to pose to you guys. Like, it seems like, okay, Amadeus Cho, he's the seventh smartest dude on Earth. Uh-huh. He's supposed to be a clever hero.
Yes.
Do you think that in this he is doing more smashing and bashing and punching and stuff because that's, like, that was Hercules' jive and now he's kind of the new Herc? Or is it because that's, like, a thing of the genre? If you're going to have a front runner character, like, with their own title, does that mean they have to be more action focused?
I don't think they have to be, because in previous appearances of Amadeus Cho, he definitely uses his intelligence in such a way that it keeps it action packed, because I kind of get the feeling that the reason that you want that, the smashing and the bashing is kind of the focus of comics, is because comics are supposed to be, at least Cape comics are an action packed, it's an action packed genre, right? But you can show Cho being intelligent without smashing stuff. And I think here we kind of see it go, see the two things go together, because, like, for example, early in, I think it's in issue one where he's fighting Griffin, he throws the mace in such a way that the pillar stops the Ferris wheel from falling, right?
Yeah.
And it shows his little calculations going along. And then some of the exposition later, it tries to show him doing math so he can smash and bash more efficiently. So that's kind of a combination of the two. I don't think it necessarily has to be that way. I think you're right, Jen, in that we do see him smashing a lot in this, but I don't think it's because he is the star of the comic.
Okay.
I think it works out really well, like that first fight against the crap. You just said his name and I forgot it already.
Griffin.
Griffin, like that fight shows really, really well how he's using math in his brain to fight harder, or to fight smarter rather than harder, you know? I think that's really good, but then like you get all that punching and fighting later on in the comic where it doesn't show that, like when he's teamed up with Thor. And then after you see all that just smashing without seeing the brains, then you also see him lose. Like, he doesn't do the Thoth thing right. He gets fooled with the apples. Like there's four things they have to get, and he gets beaten on three of them, you know?
And I think Thor addresses that, right, in issue four, where he tries to take Amadeus Cho out of the fight, and he says, "You're just like Loki. In that you have to prove yourself. You have to prove that you're so smart, and you're the only one that thinks that you're not." And he says that he was brash and plowed headlong into things and damned the consequences. And I think that's kind of what we see through this whole thing. But because Cho always had like his attitude in all the previous appearances, especially in the Incredible Hercules run. Hercules was there kind of to keep him in check, but we don't notice that Cho is acting any different, and he's not really, and it takes Thor to remind him that,
Yeah, it's just that when he goes headlong into stuff, it's like it undermines the idea of him being so smart, Like, if he were so smart, then wouldn't he not come up short three times in a row? But then you got to kind of realize, like, the kind of the weight division in which he's playing, they're gods. like, he's literally playing in the weight division of the goddess of wisdom. And that's kind of the thing that he shows over and over that he's lacking, by just running headlong into everything.
Yeah, and I mean, he makes a lot of mistakes in choosing his actions when he's trying to outsmart Vali. That's his name, right?
Vali. Yeah, Vali Halfling. Mm-hmm.
And does that mean that he isn't smart, or does that mean he just makes mistakes? I don't think being smart totally makes you immune from making poor decisions, right?
Yeah.
This is actually the point where I wish that I had read the comics in the proper order. Because I think if I had, at this point, I would have been like, wow, I would have seen him so upset at the funeral, and I would have been like, he's rushing into things like that without thinking first, because he's so desperate to find a way to get his friend back. Mm-hmm. I would have interpreted it as grief. I mean,
yeah, and that's what it is, I think, because I mean, we call this sidekicks moving up, like sidekicks getting upgraded. And I think it's worth mentioning, like, does Amadeus Cho ever grow really out of being a sidekick in this series of comics? I mean, he's named the Prince of Power. He's given the title that his former mentor had. But it's not like he didn't grow into it. He didn't choose it. It was appointed to him. And then he used all of that power to get his mentor back. It's sort of like in the end, he's right, Hercules isn't dead. Hercules is just gone, and that's what ends up happening. But at the same time, it's sort of like he can't accept. He hasn't gotten to the acceptance phase of mourning yet, where he's like, okay, Herc is just gone.
And I mean, it's pretty soon, right? Because Athena says, I'll give you this power. And, he's still coping. And then I think it's like just a few days later, at the very most, she walks into her office and he's now the CEO, and he's like, fine, I'll take you up on that. So maybe he just saw it as a way to get his friend back more than as a way to come into his own. Like, I certainly don't see Amadeus Cho as thinking, I am the hero now, I'm a kind of protagonist. It's all about, like, Hercules was my best friend and I need to find him and get him back so we can restore that dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. He doesn't move out of the, I guess, sidekick role. He does kind of, in that he is now undertaking this this quest on his own, but the quest is to maybe be a sidekick again.
But I think when Hercules comes back, the power dynamic would be different. You know?
Certainly.
It would have to be, aside from the fact that he is the Prince of Power, and he's grown so much, he's had to take on so much more power and responsibility when Hercules is gone. It's a terrible analogy to make, but the one I'm going to make is that it's like when a child's parents die, like, they grow into the role of responsibility because it needs to happen. And so here, his mentor, his comic book parent, is dead, supposedly. So he has to grow to fill the role of responsibility, that vacuum that's there in his life. And what's kind of nice about seeing this growth, I mean, it's sudden because of Hercules' death, but at the same time, it's nice that we get to see the clear progression, because Cho here is different than Cho when we first see him. You know, like, it's nice that this progression takes over. I mean, what? When did we first get Cho? It's like 2007, 2008?
He appears around the time of World War Hulk.
But it's just, whatever it was, it's just a couple years. And so it's not like Robin, right? Robin was Robin for like decades and then suddenly turns 18 and suddenly becomes this way more mature person. It's like this personification of who Robin is totally changed out of nowhere. And I don't remember, maybe there was an event that happened in the DC Universe that, like, made him more mature, made that switch happen. But, like, as far as I remember, the reason he became Nightwing is because he turned 18, and he wanted to get out of the house and go to college or some stupid grown-up bullshit, like, some stupid teenager excuse, you know? But it's nice that Cho, because it happens just over a course of a couple years, it feels like a way more natural progression.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, is, so, maybe, I really can't remember, can you guys help me here? The last time we saw Amadeus Cho, I recall he was kind of on a quest to discover some truth. And did it maybe involve his parents in some way?
Yeah, he was trying to find out what happened to his, I think what happened to his sister. It's okay. The one where in the comic he's reading Joseph Campbell's A Hero's Journey.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the seed where Cho growing into his own hero starts, because that's his like first solo adventure. He's not with Hercules through that, and he has to, you know, discover these different things, fight his own villain, and then, you know, like he's supposed to mirror the hero's journey, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the first place we see him start to grow into his own character.
Okay. Thank you. I was, like, totally blanking on that. I just remember this impression I got of him, like, this kid's really put together. It wasn't, like, you know, he didn't walk around going, gee, willikers, Hercules, let's get these bad guys. And I mean, that's part of, like, a golden age and silver age of comics thing, where sidekicks are just goofy kids. It's very, like, 1950s middle America fluff. But, you know, I don't think we need to see him turn 18 and suddenly be like, I'm going to be my own man, because we've had that the whole time. He's kind of been his own character. He's so smart and put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been independent since the first time we see him, he's on his moped going across the country with his gadgets that he built, like, in his garage or whatever. You know, like, he's always been that independent character. He just needed a mentor, because from the very beginning, I think it's like his first or second adventure. I'm going to use that in quotes. Like, it's his first or second adventure that he takes on fucking S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Right, like...
He gets Hercules to help him.
Yeah. But at a certain point, if that's, like, his first or second adventure, like, dude, you need to realize that the status quo is maybe here for a reason. Like, you need somebody there, brother.
Yeah.
You need somebody to come in there, just make sure what you're doing is actually worth doing.
Well, he needs somebody to set him on the right path, and that's kind of what Hercules does. Hercules is his mentor. I think it's... See, like, we call him a sidekick because he... You know, Hercules is the big established hero, and Cho is like the budding young hero, right? But it's really more of a, in the same way that Batman is Robin's mentor, and then Robin turns into Nightwing, Hercules is Cho's mentor. But at the same time, it's not really the same type of dynamic that Robin and Batman have, because Batman's teaching Robin how to fight and be a detective and things like that. Hercules isn't teaching Cho how to fight.
Yeah, they're Hercules not the same. Cho knew how to fight coming into it.
But he fights in a completely different way than Hercules does. Hercules is inadvertently teaching Cho how to be a hero.
How to be a man.
Yeah, because it's through as we find out later in the series, it's through Athena's machinations, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason Cho and Hercules hang out is because they're like bros. You know, it's not. It's not as if I don't. I mean, Hercules kind of does take Cho under his wing, but it's not like, oh, your parents died, so you're going to be my young ward now. You know, it's not the same kind of dynamic. It's like they're buddies, so they hang out and they learn from one another.
Yeah, the Batman Robin relationship is way more built around the idea of like father son. Mm-hmm. This is not like that. I mean, because it might be because the age gap is so much larger. I mean, Hercules is a couple thousand years old.
Yeah.
You know? And it might also be because of Hercules' personality. It feels like more the cool uncle dynamic, if it's going to be anything. You know? Mm-hmm. Or like, bros is a really good way to put it, but it's not quite bros. It's
only color-popped bros, you know?
No, but I mean, it's not like they're best friends, but the dynamic is different from that because Hercules does do mentoring, you know?
So
it's a unique form of sidekickery.
I have a question in this case, or yes. I guess more of a discussion point. So I think sidekick is one of those things where you see him and you can identify him, like, without even thinking about it. But how do we want to define a sidekick? Because, for instance, is Blue Beetle Booster Gold's sidekick or his best bro?
Like, definitely best bro.
Yeah. No.
But what makes that distinction between Amadeus Cho and Hercules aside from the age gap?
That's really Oh, go ahead, Andy.
I think it is the age gap. Because I can't think of any other instance where there's a sidekick where there isn't an age gap like that. Well, okay, no, I take that back. You have Power Girl and Terra, but that's the only instance I can think of. And even then, Terra is, even if she's not physically younger, she has the younger, more childish person, sheltered personality. She has the childish naivete. So she's functionally the same as being
There's
younger.
The thing, though, because I would say that in some ways, Amadeus Cho is more mature than Hercules.
Well, so here I Googled it quickly, and this is the Wikipedia definition. A sidekick is a close companion who is generally regarded as subordinate to the one he accompanies. So in that definition, I don't know if Cho really is a sidekick. Because I feel like they're pretty equal, except for maybe the fact that that Cho is learning from Hercules, and Hercules is older.
Yeah.
So Doctor Strange, for example, has Wong, who is his, like, valet kind of thing. But he's definitely subordinate to Doctor Strange, so does that mean Wong is his sidekick? I mean, Wong's older.
No, because, well,
or is it because he's defined as a valet or type of, you know, a valet / butler type person?
Alfred isn't Batman's sidekick.
But isn't he? But he's definitely a close companion who is subordinate. So I think.
But this is so hard. Right?
I would totally call Alfred a sidekick.
I wouldn't.
In comic book land, I wouldn't call him a sidekick. He's more of a supporting character. If we want to, so like Robin, definitely a sidekick. There's no doubt about that. He's like the original sidekick.
That's the definition of sidekick is
right.
Robin.
But so if we want to use Robin as the definition, then Alfred is definitely not a sidekick.
Yeah, I think the subordination is what throws it off. That definition is a little misleading. I think it's more of a, I think the sidekick position is more of the trainee to a trainer.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd say Alfred's position is similar to that of Oracle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
A similar standing, different function.
Right. But will they both provide a support function to the hero that they're working with?
Yeah. And I think it's the mentorship that makes Cho the sidekick in this relationship. Mm-hmm. Or makes him able to be defined as a sidekick. Because he might be smarter than Hercules. He might be even more mature than Hercules. But Hercules has been doing one thing for a couple thousand years that Cho really wants to do, but doesn't actually have a grasp on how to do yet. Not at least do right. And that's be a hero, go out, fight monsters, and kick ass. Like, Hercules has been a hero for literally thousands of years. He's fucking pro at that. And Amadeus Cho has been a hero for literally, like, 2 months. And as smart as he is, luckily we get to see him pick up on it really quick. Like, we can see him grow from sidekick to Prince of Power in a couple of years. I mean, you could read that series of comics in, like, a month, you know? So we're fortunate that he's smart and capable, and he can grow out of that sidekick role pretty quickly because he's that smart. But I think he's still very much falls into that sidekick role, and I think that because he is younger, he also is more reticent to give that position up. Like, Hercules is dead. Like, I may have learned everything I need to from him, but I think because of the grown attachment, because Cho is younger, I think it's that attachment of, I need him. It's like, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said he applied to two colleges, except the one he really wanted to get into, he wanted to get into for no good reason other than that his brother was going there. Because it's the thing I know, I want to stay with it, there's still some things I need to get from this guy, I just want to go there. And you end up not being able to go there, except at a certain point you're old enough to accept that fate. And I think Cho just isn't old enough to accept this as a fate of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to the benefit of everyone in the end, but I think that's why he can't grow out of that sidekick role.
That was pretty well put. I like that.
Bam! Did that.
Good job, Andy.
Yeah!
I think we have a couple other things we want to talk about sidekickery. We can bring them up in the next couple episodes, too. Because I've got, like, a list of sidekick stuff I want to talk about, and I'm glad that we hit up that one.
How do we define a sidekick, right?
Down, yes.
Well, I think the definition, kind of continuing that, I feel like the definition of sidekick has definitely changed, right? Because Batman has been around for coming up on 60 years now, right?
Yeah.
And he's had a Robin for most of that time, but it hasn't always been Dick Grayson. As soon as Dick Grayson moved on, but afterwards he got another one. I think the next one was Jason Todd, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tim Drake was after Jason Todd.
Yeah.
And so, and then after Jason gets killed, I don't know why I laughed at that, we get Tim Drake, and then there's, you know, Stephanie Brown. Is her name Stephanie Brown? What's her name? Stephanie Brown.
Yeah, the new Batgirl.
Well, and then there's also
the old name Batgirl.
Yeah. And then there was also the girl in The Dark Knight Returns. I forget what her name is. And now we have Damian Wayne. And I feel like if you think about, like, try to think of the imagine the differences between Damian Wayne and Dick Grayson as Robin, right?
Yes.
That is not the same kind of person. Damian doesn't want to be there. He questions his dad. Damian's kind of like, you know, he's trained by the League of Assassins. He came into his role as Robin already knowing how to be a fighter and stuff, right? So is he being, in what way is, what does he gain from his relation, his sidekickship with Batman?
Honestly, probably just continued survival. Not that he couldn't make it in the world on his own, but dear God, what kind of person would he grow up into? And I think what he gets is that when he grows up, he will, fingers crossed, be on the right side of the law. And that's because of Batman.
Right, and Batman's going to temper him, right?
If it weren't for that, you know that Damian Wayne would 100% have become a villain. There's no doubt about it. You can tell by his personality, let alone his background.
I mean, his grandfather is Ra's al Ghul, right? So
he's gonna learn,
is either going to be dad or grandpa going to teach him the ways of the world.
Jesus.
And probably dad's the right person if you want him to be a superhero. I mean, eventually we know that he, you know, DC did the sneak peeks, and we know that Damian will be Batman one day. But if you think of him as a kid, if he wasn't, like you said, Andy, he would probably become a villain. Because the League of Assassins is all villains.
And who's to say whether or not Cho would have become a villain, too? I mean, I think that's what Herc brings to the table, is that he can say, look, this is how you make the right and wrong decision. Herc was just as willing to stop him from attacking S.H.I.E.L.D. as Herc was to help him. But luckily, Herc was willing to sit down and be like, okay, explain to me why. I am dumb and slow, and I like beer and banging women. Explain to me why this is a good idea. And Cho was able to explain it and convince him and okay, you are correct. Let's go. But if it weren't for that and he just did it, he would have been a criminal. He would have been on the wrong side of the law, and he would have had to continue digging himself out of that hole. But at that point, do you almost just keep digging the hole deeper by instinct? Who's to say? I mean, if nothing else, that's maybe what Hercules saved Amadeus from.
So I think that Herc is what I would consider a modern sidekick, like Damian Wayne is.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to being a sidekick than learning how to be, arrest criminals. It's about teaching the youth of today's youth to be the heroes of tomorrow, right?
And we can see the graduation with. Even though Cho is not willing to let go of Hercules, we can see the graduation in the fact that Thor has become Cho's sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
throughout this journey, Thor is taking orders from Cho. To a point, but he's doing it.
Well, and then we even see that, Cho has support characters now, right? I mean, Delphine appears in Incredible Hercules at some point, but she is now... She is not Herc's, she's not his sidekick, definitely, but she's his team-up character, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Delphine Herc, or the Delphine Cho team-up thing. And so he knows now how to accept help from other people when he can't do things on his own. Because, like you said, Andy, he probably would have tried to take S.H.I.E.L.D. on his own.
Yeah, and without somebody like Hercules to back him up, you're just a criminal fool, and Thor and Iron Man, everybody's just going to take you down.
Yeah.
And it's going to be over. Sorry, bro. So, okay, wait. Tell me about Delphine. That's Cho's girlfriend?
Quote? Yeah. So
I don't have any background on her beyond this.
Okay, so we didn't read this arc from Incredible Hercules. There was an arc called Love and War, and basically what happens is this Amazonian queen tries to take over the world. That's the gist of it. And Delphine is one of her subordinates, and Herc and Cho stop them. Herc does his punching thing, but the way you guys know the cool story bro meme where Herc has his thumbs up, that's from that run. And the reason Herc does that, he's doing that to Cho. It doesn't say cool story bro in the comic. It's just Herc smiling with his thumbs up, is because he knows that Cho is about to get laid. And the girl is Delphine because she's smitten with him. It doesn't happen. He doesn't actually get laid in the comic, but you know, Herc, he's totally pushing for that to happen. But basically the part of the reason they are able to beat this Amazonian queen is because Delphine falls for Cho.
Mm-hmm.
But Athena throws her in the prison because she was part of this group of Amazonians who tried to overthrow the Earth and the Olympian gods. So that's basically where she comes from.
Nice.
Because I love
her.
I
think she's another part of the reason why she hates the gods is because she's one of the last Gorgons.
One of the last cursed ones.
Yeah. Well, she can turn her snake powers on, her stone powers on and off, I think.
Yeah.
It's not like Medusa where if you look at her, you're totally boned.
It's because I think
or maybe I should say stoned.
Jesus.
Because I should go back and read that because I freaking love her. I think she's badass. Not just because of the montage, the armoring up montage.
I mean, honestly, if you guys, if you're interested, if you enjoy any of this run at all, you should read the whole series. It's really not that long, because it's I know that it goes from like one, it took over the numbering of Incredible Hulk, so it goes from like 118 to like 150 or so. So there's like 40 issues, or there's maybe like a little, there's about 40 issues. Then you read Prince of Power, and then you have to read Chaos War, and that kind of wraps it up. So it's not that long. A ton of issues, but it's really, really good. It's a very fun comic. You get a lot, you get all the things that you get, that typical heroes and cape stuff, but the dynamic between Hercules and Cho is really great. So cool. What's my little way to plug that comic, because it's one of my favorites.
So Jen, what did you think of Delphine Gorgon?
I was just kind of like, I liked her a lot, but at the same time, I was like, I really wish they had explained her a bit more. I mean, they did some really good stuff with explanation, actually. I love the blue text boxes with the arrows. Yeah,
they're really well done in this comic.
Like, that's a great way to have a third-person narrator, omniscient. But at the same time, I kind of wish I had gotten a bit more than, like, she was an Amazonian, and she's now a Gorgon, and she tried to kill Athena. Because I think, I don't know, without the background of their relationship, you can tell, like, they love each other, but then they're like, you're my reason to live, and it felt very, like, okay, that's nice, but where did that come from? Because I guess for something like, that's supposed to be someone's big revelation, right, in life. Yeah. Like, you found the one. And yeah. I don't know, it just seemed kind of random here.
Yeah, I think that the challenge with this comic is that it's in continuity.
And yeah, and I think the authors were probably told, you have four episodes or four issues to get from point A to point B, because that's when Chaos War starts, and we need your boy to be there and ready for it.
Yeah,
and I like Delphine, but I think, like, it's just break her out, get her fighting, show people who she is in case they're picking up just to get to Chaos War. So I think she's kind of hurt by that editorial thing. I really do wish this would have been a couple more issues. I feel like they, like, almost rush through the four things they have to pick up.
Yeah, it happens all very quickly, especially the final item.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where I think it's, like, one frame he's at, like, the top of the pillar, and then the very next frame after you turn the page, he's down at the bottom picking up the cup. And I'm like, wait, did he just fucking jump down? What the hell happened here, bro?
Well, actually, Andy, it says, there's a bubble that says he used the Banner Tech teleporter.
Yeah, but
come on, Andy. Yeah, but I get what you're saying. That's like a, it's like, hey, this is like a, look at what happened. He teleported all of a sudden.
Then why doesn't he just teleport straight to the cup? Like, hold his breath, teleport straight to the cup underwater, grab the cup, teleport out.
Because it's magic milk, water, or whatever. And it's swirling. So you know.
Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying, though. It does feel rushed.
But if it feels rushed, what did you guys think of the solution, the conclusion to it?
That he regains his omniscience.
Well, like the whole Cho gaining omniscience, choosing to give it up, and then bam, there's Hercules.
I think what he does is he uses it to find Herc, and then when Herc appears, he bestows the omniscience onto Hercules.
Yeah.
And then Hercules realizes that the Chaos King is coming.
When he sees all, he's like, oh, fuck, bro.
Yeah.
I just really, my whole question was Amadeus Cho planning that the whole time?
I
don't know if we're meant to know, or like, it's just, he's so smart, and he acts kind of in this really not thought out way, especially for him. So maybe he was planning on giving up this omniscience the whole time, or it could just be like, oh, I realized now that I'm omniscient that I shouldn't be, and that's bad.
Well, Thor says, like, you're not worthy of it, basically. And then, like, I didn't get the notion that he was planning to give it up. I think his entire plan was to find Hercules, and then I didn't get the idea that he had planned past that.
Yeah, I think he was just going headlong into the situation, and he didn't I think exactly what you said, David. He wasn't planning past it, and then once he gained the omniscience, he finally got the wisdom to know that he wasn't wise enough to have this.
Yeah.
Like, this is not for him. He is not, his soul is not prepared for this sort of task. And so he has to hand it off to somebody who is prepared. And I don't know if that's Hercules. I mean, if you make Hercules the ultimate god of the universe, there's going to be a lot of wine and beer and bitches everywhere, which I think would be sick, but, you know. I don't know if it's necessarily better.
We pose the tough questions.
So is there anything else you guys wanted to bring up? I mean, do you guys think that Cho was a responsible prince of power while he held the position? I guess he hasn't given that up yet. But.
Well, so one thing that's left out of this, and that they, well, I don't remember if they might have just glossed over it a little bit, but the reason why Athena picks Cho to be the prince of power, she feels like the world has changed in such a way that being able to punch stuff really hard no longer is what makes a true hero. And so somebody who can think well is what she believes is the what defines
especially if they end up being the head of a corporation because of the title. Like, it seems like only natural that punching doesn't necessarily make you a great CEO.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting to note, like, he gains all of this power and all of this ability, and the first thing he does with it is blow tons of it on this quest for Herc. When at the same time, we saw who was it? It was Venus and Namora go around and see how Hercules blew all the money, you know? And it seems like, man, Hercules, like, blew through money really quick, but it seems like he did it a lot better than...
He was just he was highly philanthropic, but also very irresponsible.
Yeah.
Well, it was irresponsible so in a positive way.
Yeah, it's like he had the natural instinct for good, and he ran around spending money in the way that only a person like that could. Especially that fucking children's hospital. Man, that shit was... That was like... That should be like a Lifetime movie.
I mean, Cho, he's being irresponsible with the power that he wields in such that he's being extremely selfish about it. He's trying to bring back Hercules because he wants his friend back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not, I don't know if it's, to me, it's irresponsible and selfish in such that the Olympus group is more than just Cho.
Yeah. Right? There's like tons of mortals just working there for
Olympus. Now, wanting to bring your friend back from the dead is not necessarily selfish. I mean,
no.
If you can save your friend, if you can save somebody, you probably should do it. That's kind of the definition, part of being a hero, right? But doing it at the expense of so many other people is probably a bad thing.
I mean, think of what good he could have done in the world with that. What was it, $700 billion he spent on that thing to view the multiverse?
Mm-hmm.
Like, bro, feed Africa.
Yeah, I mean, clearly
I know Hercules is awesome and all, but feed Africa.
He's never seen Star Trek 2.
No, not even a little bit.
Because he would know that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Right. Spocked.
You know, there's a reference to that line in Transformers Dark of the Moon, too.
Really?
Transformers 3. Yeah, I watched that the other day because I had fucking nothing better to watch, apparently. And Leonard Nimoy voices a Transformer and says that line. So there. That's today's tangent. Boom.
You know, that's not the first time he's voiced a Transformer, either.
I know. The first time was a lot better than this time.
Yeah, Galvatron's a fucking boss. But anyways... Maybe we should read a Transformer comic someday.
We already have.
Other than Infected.
Oh, wait, we have Infestation.
Infestation, that's what it was called. We should do the non-Infestation version of those comics, because I feel like some of those would have been pretty fun.
Okay, anyways, back to...
Yeah, legit. Let's get back to this.
Back to the story. So, yeah, I mean, so I think we agree that Cho isn't the best Prince of Power, at least in what we see of him, because he's being pretty selfish.
Yeah, I think Cho's a lot of a lot of impulsivity, which is fitting for a character his age. You know, like, just the immediate task at hand, how do I solve it, and damn the consequences later. And, I mean, that's Thor's observation in Prince of Power, but it's true in the Fall of an Avenger, too, when they had, like, the 3-on-3 fight, and he uses the Banner Tech teleporter to teleport Nightmare into Banner's lab. It's like, that's great. Problem staved off right now, but Banner's like, fool, I gotta get home to that. That motherfucker's in my lab.
He foisted the problem onto somebody else, right?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, now you deal with it. Get out of my face. You're somebody else's problem.
Yeah, but it's like, dude, that's not cool, bro.
That was kind of mean.
That's not very heroic.
No, you're lucky that Bruce Banner is a relatively level-headed guy.
Right.
Exactly. There. Like, I don't know here, bro. You know, so we see him make a lot of bad decisions like that. And it's kind of nice that we have somebody who is the Prince of Power, who's the seventh smartest. Like, he has all of the pluses that Tony Stark has. Super smart, super rich, suave, like he's got a nice suit on. Huh? Yeah. Like, and he goes around gallivanting, doing fun stuff, and throwing himself headlong. Like, he gets all of the bonuses that we get when we read Tony Stark, but he doesn't have as many of the same negatives. Or at least, maybe they're shown differently. Like, when I think about Amadeus Cho, my natural instinct is to compare him to the smartest persons in the world, numbers 1 through 6. You know, I think that's the natural thing to do, and I think that there's a running theme in Marvel Comics that these guys have the flaw of throwing themselves headlong into the situation and then figuring it out later.
Well, Reed Richards is the poster boy for that.
Yes.
He is so obsessed. Some might say he's so focused on his work that he completely ignores other things around him, and that's one of the keys to the whole Sue Storm, Reed Richards dynamic, is how much he ignores her.
Yeah.
I was reading it. Was it this? I was reading a comic recently where that came up, where they talked about Sue being ignored.
Yeah, I don't think it was in this.
Oh, you know what it was? It was actually, I was watching the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Hero cartoon.
Nice.
Which is a cool cartoon.
They're all kind of like that. Hank Pym is like that, too. Pym has his idea of Pym particles, and he wants to make that work, and to hell if the idea doesn't work out and it ruins him, that's his gig.
Yeah, and Dr. Doom, too. He's the same way.
Yeah. Like, this is my thing. I'm going to run at it headlong, and whatever happens because of that, it doesn't matter because I'm a genius and I'm right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, like Doom is the opposite side of the coin from Richards. Like, he's so focused on his goals that it's really damn the consequences, because it makes him an evil guy, right?
Yeah. He's 100% ends justify the means.
Yeah.
And I think Cho is a little bit that way, too, except for him, somehow, it seems to work out in the positive. Like, it's like Cho is almost lucky.
Well, because Cho, like, one could argue that Cho is doing good things. He's not trying to take over the world.
Yeah, his consequence, or his end goal is saving Hercules, and the means to do that is burning through a couple $1 trillion.
I think Cho's biggest flaw is his short-sightedness.
Yeah.
His goal is immediately in front of him, right? He doesn't plan for the long term, and so he doesn't see the ripple effects of his actions. Like, that's what we're saying, damn the consequences, right? He only cares about solving the immediate problem.
Yeah, and I mean, he clearly cares to some degree about the people around him. Like, when he talks to his girlfriend, and she's in the prison cell, he's like, you know, as soon as I figure out what's actually going on here, I'm going to figure out how to get you out of there if you're innocent. And it's like, he can take time out of his search for Hercules to focus on her problem as well, which is not something, like, for instance, Reed Richard has ever been capable of doing. On the other hand, Reed Richard is, I would argue, like, an abusive husband/boyfriend.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely is.
That's different matter.
I mean, luckily Cho is young enough that his flaws won't manifest in such a traumatic way yet. I mean, I'm chalking that up to his youth, because that's the easiest excuse. Maybe it's just he doesn't have enough people around him to damage in that way. I don't know. We'll see what happens to Delphine Gorgon.
we could say that there are people that are damaged by his actions. They're just invisible to us.
Right.
Because they're the employees of the Olympus group, right? In one of the issues... Because
they're abstracted by dollar signs, well, right? Because he burns through trillions of dollars, and that trillions of dollars could help hell of people.
Well, he even says that there's like a... I think it's in issue one or two, there's a memo from Cho to the employees of the Olympus group, and he says every department is going to have their budgets cut by 85%.
Yeah.
That's extremely selfish.
Hell of people getting fired tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, all of those memos are pretty childish and mean to his employees, because obviously, like, that's not a way to manage anyone.
Like, it's fun to read, but nobody would ever want to work there, ever.
Yeah.
It's like, haha, look at how funny Cho is being, but the truth of the fact of the matter is, if you received that memo, you'd be like, fuck
that guy is an asshole. And I think if there's any big flaw with this comic... I think that's it. I think a lot of the comic just goes, hey, look at this funny thing, ha 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 ha. And it's like, so long as you don't think about it for more than 5 seconds, your reaction is also, hey, that's really funny, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Except then if you take that more than 5 seconds, think about it, go, oh, fuck.
Well, I think that's
hella messed up, bro.
I think typical readers aren't picking the story apart the way we are.
Deconstruct it the way we do.
Yeah, but no, you're totally right. I think most people would just be like, hey, that's funny, but it's not funny. He's being pretty irresponsible.
And I think it's good. I think it's not to say that Cho's short-sightedness or selfishness or the fact that these are actually terrible people is good. I think what's good about this is that memo will make... That memo is written in a way that, like, a 14-year-old would laugh at it, you know? And a lot of these jokes... I mean, this is a fun comic to read, and you can pick it apart, and you can have an intellectual thought about it, but I think a lot of this comic is something that I would love to read if I were 14 or 15,
mm-hmm.
which the last couple weeks we've been talking about how important it is for the comic book industry to get more readers, and I think something like this is perfect because it's like the Pixar effect. The younger people like it, and the older people like it. It's great for everybody.
They need to inject this kind of thing into the flagship titles to get people on.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man is probably a good example of where this kind of thing could exist. I don't know. And I think, well, if we don't mind moving on a little bit, I agree with you that Cho's irresponsibility is a good thing for him as a character because it leaves him room to grow. I mean, when Dick Grayson becomes Nightwing, he doesn't automatically become the ultimate Batman clone because he put on a different costume, right? You have to see him grow as a character, just like Batman continues to grow as a character. I mean, we could look at the Court of Owls, right? That whole thing was about how Batman didn't know Gotham City in as well as he thought he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we see Cho as... You know, now he's number one main hero guy, but he still has a lot to learn about being a good hero, and this is a good example of it. He's trying to do heroic things, but he's so short-sighted and selfish that he misses the consequences. And so it's good that hopefully we get to see him grow as a character and as a person and become the hero that Athena thinks that he's going to be.
Shit, I got nothing to follow that up. Are there you guys got anything more to add? Or should we get down to rating this?
Oh, we should talk about the art a little bit.
Oh, yeah, fuck. Forgot all about that. Art. Yes, this is a comic book. Sequential art.
This was a great novel.
Hashtag missing the point. So what did you guys think of the art?
I actually liked the art in the... latter four issues more than in the first two, even though I thought, like, just artistically I found the first two more appealing, but they didn't fit the comic quite well for me.
Ditters.
I don't know.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But I will say that I think that, well, I think all four of these comics have great covers.
That is true. I really like the one with Cho in the front and Thor, like, in the back.
Prince of Power number one?
Yes, that one.
I like Prince of Power number four, the one where he's got all six arms and he's holding
Chokrishna?
Yeah, but he's holding the cover of Incredible Hercules number 118.
Yes.
Mm.
I like that one, too. In just because it was like everything that makes up his character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just pretty representative.
That's what happens when you become omniscient. You see the meta world.
I thought the art for Prince of Power was really... It fit the story really well. But what's great about this comic, even going back to what you were saying, Andy, about the how this would be a good comic for a 14-year-old, the art communicates that really well. Especially, I think it's issue Prince of Power number 3 when they're fighting after Cho figures out how to defeat the cat lady that I forgot her name already.
Oh, yeah, the one in Egypt.
Sekhet,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Sure. And he gives her the super concentrated alcohol, and she turns into the cat meme lady.
Yes.
I was not a fan of that.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying that change in her art is great.
Yeah. But
the fact that it plays on, like, popular culture. It's like, oh, now she's talking like a cheeseburger. I can't have cheeseburger cat, right? And she's got the stupid cat look. So the art definitely fits the tone very well, is what I'm trying to get at, I think. Because it changes it to something that a 14-year-old from 2010 would definitely recognize.
Yes. I think the other good bonus of the second one is that it's very bright, colorful, and fun to read. I mean, we talk about bright, colorful comic book art a lot, and we talk about that sort of in the, I want to say the Jim Lee style of art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of piping on uniforms and that kind of thing, and, like, everybody's just super buff and hella masculine, you know? But in this, because it's Cho, we don't get that super masculinity. We don't get the hyper buff kind of guys. Even Thor isn't really drawn that way. The only person that's drawn that way, really, is Hercules, because he's the hero worship, you know, example of this comic.
Well, like, Hercules as a character in general, even
it is
in
super buff.
Is that he's the prototypical hero, right?
Yeah.
He's like the basic hero that other heroes are built on in one way or another, right?
Yeah. So I think when you read this, it's fun to read because you don't get any of the visual hookups that you get. Because you see, like, Superman, and okay, maybe your brain can put the costume inside your fourth wall. You know, maybe you can assimilate that into your mind, and that won't pull you away. But I've never seen anybody with muscles like that. That's just weird. Like, I've seen dudes in spandex. I mean, there's the internet. But I've never seen dudes that look like that, right? Like, that, I mean, it's laughable, but to a certain degree, that's what pulls your brain out of the fact that you're reading a piece of literature and puts it into, I'm reading a comic book. And this is bright and fun to read because you don't get the hang of, because it's just a kid in a weird suit. You know, the things that pull you out of it are the things that you've been drawing images of in your mind for forever. Like, you hear about Greek gods when you're little, you hear about most of this stuff when you're a kid, and because you're a kid and you don't really understand it, you don't know all the stories, it's just kind of this weird amorphous thing in your head, like, oh, I recognize that name, I recognize that name, I recognize that one name. And so when you read this, it just kind of pulls all those associations in, and visually you don't make that break because you didn't really have an image of what she looked like before. Like, oh, that's what Athena looks like, sure, whatever, that's cool. And it just kind of assimilates straight onto it. And it just makes it a quick, fun, flowing read for that reason, I think. But I might have also just pulled all of that right out of my ass.
No, I agree with your point there. Yeah, nothing to add to it.
Sorry, that made me choke on my wine. So generally, I think we like the art?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's rate this. David, how about you go first?
Okay, I'm going to try to rate this as a comic in and of itself.
Nonpartisan as possible.
Yeah. I think this is probably a 3.5. My true to if I followed my heart, I would give this a 5. I think it's a 3.5. As a comic on its own, it's a 3.5. It's better than average, and it's because I think this is a good place for us to start in our sidekicks like moving up type of arc. Because we see a character who moves out of the shadow of his mentor, but he's also afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. And as he this is just a few short issues where we see Cho move from sidekick to hero on his own, and we see his reluctance and his, but we also see his a little bit of growth and the potential for him to grow even more. So from that context, I think this is a good example of a sidekick growing. It's a fun story, and it's, I think Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente are an excellent, excellent team of writers for any comic.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't we just read something by? No, I did. Sorry, I was thinking Fred Van Lente just wrote G.I. Joe number 1 for IDW, and I just read it, and it's really good. Well, I liked issue number 1 a lot. But yeah, so this comic has got a lot going for it. It's not the best comic I've ever read. It's not like Underwater Welder or something like that. I'm going to say highbrow, but I mean that in the best way possible.
Not pretentious, but still highbrow.
Right. This is just a really fun comic, and I think it's one of the best ones that Marvel has put out in recent years. Maybe 3.5, after all the good things I've showered upon it. 3.5 seems a little bit low, but it's not perfect. It's, you know, it's still got, there's some hiccups in it, and this is, like Jen, you said, this was too, it felt too short. It felt like it was rushed, and probably, like Andy said, it was an editorial decision so they could get to Chaos War. But, you know, it's still good, and if you've read any of the other Hercules stuff from this run, then you will be greeted with something very familiar and warm and fuzzy. So 3.5 to 4 is somewhere in there.
Warm and fuzzy. That's perfect definition or perfect phrase.
So yeah, that's my rating.
All right. How about you, Jen?
I'm going to give this a 3. I enjoyed it, but I at the same time feel like it didn't do enough to highlight the main character and the emotions and changes he was going through, because his best friend just died, and we see that he's upset, but, you know, we really don't get too much from him as a character. It's like everyone from the narrator to the people around him, like Thor, speak for him, and we don't get, I guess, too much of Amadeus's own perspective, at least not enough for me. Again, like an issue of not enough, the development between him and Delphine. It's like, we see they're in love, and they're so important to each other, but it doesn't mean anything unless we really know why, and even a little bit more exposition could have done that. So, while I did enjoy it, and I like Amadeus Cho, and I would go on to read something that he was featured in, absolutely, and, like, kind of see where this all went. Like, I really was curious about what Chaos War was going to be, even with that super cheesy ending of, like, you know, more epic than Annihilation.
You know,
yeah. Best event yet. Like, that felt pretty, like, go away, Marvel. But, you know, it's also, like, these guys aren't the Avengers. They're not front runner, main title, Spider-Man, Venom, Thor, Captain America. So anytime I see something with Hercules, it feels like just a little more special, I think, because he's not just plastered all over everything. I mean, he's plastered, but... Oh, that was bad. Didn't even get a...
I can't even muster up a groan for that.
Yeah, it was really bad. Anyway, like, it's just Hercules, I think, is a fun hero in that he's not oversold. And Amadeus Cho and this burly God are just a really funny pairing. So they're enjoyable unto themselves. So 3.
Okay. Oh, God. I have no idea. I have no idea what I'm going to give this. I just do not know. I guess that means I'll give it a 3.5, just right between you two. I mean, it's a good comic. I think it's nice that Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente were able to craft a comic that is both really approachable to a younger audience. Like I was saying, you could give this to a 14 or 15-year-old, and they would pick it up and laugh at the jokes and read along and not think about it and have a really fun time reading it. And I had a really fun time reading it. But I like that they also put in that other level that if you really want to take a little bit more time and pick apart some of these characters, you realize that Cho isn't that awesome. He's kind of a dick. He makes dumb decisions. Thor is right, even though the writing tends to want to make you laugh at him. You know, like he's sort of more bumbling of a figure than anything else in the way that he also gets beaten. I mean, whenever that second fight when Thor and Cho and Thor just like tries to unload a bunch of lightning at him, like even though you get the times when Cho just seems to outsmart, outwit, outplay, you know, Thor all the time, you also realize that Thor is right. Even though he's the object of mockery in this comic, he's the one that's right. It's kind of like the parent-child relationship. Like, your kid can read this and go, oh, yeah, my dad's totally like Thor, but he's fucking stupid. He doesn't know what he's really doing. Cho's the one who's right. Except, if you're the parent, like, just because the kid is stronger and more capable doesn't mean that they're the one that's right. Like, Thor might not be able to beat Cho on a fight if Cho's prepared, but that doesn't mean that Thor isn't right here. And I like that you get that level of, you can pick it apart kind of like that. And at the same time, you get the other side. But it feels rushed. And I don't blame the writers for the feeling of rushness, because you know it's just the editor said, all right, bro, we need Cho to become the Prince of Power. We need to bring Herc back. We need Herc to be a herald for all these events. Like, we need these things to happen, and we need it in 4 issues. Go. You know? So it's tough to rate it down for something that's not their fault. But, I mean, I'm from the school of literary theory where it doesn't matter whose fault it is, because this is the comic and this is what we're reading, and no breaks. You read what you read, because the art will outlast the artist. So yeah, 3.5. And I really do think the best part of this comic is that you can read either side of it, and it's just as enjoyable to read either way. So yeah, that's it for this week. Next week we are going to look at Nightwing. We've been talking about Robin so much, let's fucking read him. So next week's trade is Nightwing, A Knight of Bludhaven. It's the first 8 issues of Nightwing's solo run from 1996. That's written by Chuck Dixon with art by Scott McDaniel. And this isn't the miniseries that preceded it. It's not a run from Teen Titans, because Robin first became Nightwing in Teen Titans. This is Nightwing 1-8. And if you're confused on which one to buy, you can go to our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. And on the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that bad boy, and there's a link under the picture of the trade, the right one that we're going to be reading. And you click on Amazon. It sends you right to Amazon, tells you exactly which one we're going to buy. You can print that page out, take it to your local comic book shop, and say, order this motherfucker for me, and they will do that for you. But if you need to just, if you read it and there's something in it you really want us to discuss, you can let us know that by sending us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, please hit us up on the social media. Come say hi. If, you know, you can send us a tweet, you can send us a Facebook picture, tag us in some shit. I don't know, comment on things. I don't know how Facebook works anymore, apparently. It's facebook.com/APSupercast or twitter.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Bye.